Good morning, Wisconsin. So let's pour that coffee and talk to some experts about what's going on in Milwaukee, Madison, Washington, and beyond. Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. It's the Political Power Hour on WTMJ. Here's your host, Steve Scafidi.
Should we talk about the government?
Good morning. Happy Tuesday, everybody. The first full day of the second term of President Donald Trump. Who better to talk to on this first day than Christian Snyder, who joins us on the WTMJ hotline. Good morning, Christian Snyder.
Good morning. How are you?
I am good. Apparently, you're calling us from your sick bed, which I appreciate your loyalty to the show. How you feeling?
I'm doing fine. I have COVID. Actually, yesterday during the inauguration, I fell asleep, and then when I woke up,
wow.
Donald Trump was president. So I'm like, wow, COVID's a lot stronger than I thought it was.
Have you had COVID before?
Yeah, I actually didn't get it for like 3 years after it broke out, after it dropped. But then, so it was late 22, I got it, and but haven't had it since then, no.
Yeah, so all those folks who don't think COVID's real, you can at least go by Christian's testimony is a real thing.
I can assure you it is.
All right. So you woke up and you realized at some point that Donald Trump was the president again. Your thoughts from Inauguration Day, really anywhere you want to take it. I have my thoughts. I'll certainly respond to yours.
Well, I mean, everybody was watching kind of the pomp and circumstance and thinking, wow, what a, you know, at least now we have an orderly transfer of power. But for me, it was just kind of a sad day and kind of a shameful day just because of who we elected. And it actually started with we can't let the old guy off the hook, Joe Biden, with, you know, all of his pardons that he did, pardoning family members and all that stuff. And he hasn't had a great last couple of days, especially by just waving his hand and saying the 28th Amendment to the Constitution, the Equal Rights Amendment, is now part of the Constitution. It's just been really embarrassing for him, and I think he's letting people know why he didn't they didn't reelect him, or he had to drop out. So it was sad from that respect. But then, you know, Joe Biden is the reason that we got Donald Trump, because he wouldn't drop out of the race soon enough. We get Trump, and you know, the speech was fine. It was like a half hour. He dropped in some weird stuff about changing the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. Okay, whatever. But then he goes to kind of the backup room where the backup crowd was, and he starts going in on the January 6th hostages, and he starts relitigating the election about you know, throwing out election results, how he thinks he actually won California, which is completely nuts. And I was just thinking, are we really going to do four more years of this? Is this really what we need to do? But it's, I guess it's what we want. So
I think we look at the story. I look at the story, and I'm not, you know, just like you, I'm not a Trump supporter. I think that this is one of those moments where everyone needs to start thinking a little more clearly here. And, you know, I'll use the example of one of the executive orders basically is about the weaponization of the federal government. And in the text of the actual order, he's essentially saying to his Department of Justice, I want you to weaponize that your department and go after the people who, and he was very specific, only the last 4 years leading up to his administration, see what they were doing that was illegal, essentially weaponizing the right. Federal government, when that's the name of the order. And this is sort of the silliness now of what I think a lot of us are expecting to happen in the next 4 years.
Right. He's got another executive order that's just some vague thing about we're standing up for free speech, when he's actually in court right now trying to sue an Iowa reporter for a poll that they put out that ended up being inaccurate. So he's going after people that take part in speech that he doesn't like, and yet he's signing these executive orders. It's completely nuts. And Yeah, I don't know if you want to talk about some of these executive orders, but
we're going to get to that next. I'm going to give you a chance to catch your breath. I know it's not easy to have to go on the radio and talk when it's hard to even speak. Christian Snyder, our guest. You can find his great work, National Review Online, and a lot of other places. He's a great writer, great conservative, and I'm going to continue that conversation after this on 620 WTMJ. Continuing my conversation with writer, smart guy, and sick guy, Christian Snyder, on the WTMJ hotline. We were talking about pardons, presidential pardons. Some of the really interesting details here is some of these pardons on both sides. You talked about the amendment one with Biden on his way out. Trump basically saying that the Constitution doesn't guarantee birthright citizenship. If we allow a president with executive actions and orders to essentially rewrite the Constitution, Christian, we are in deep you-know-what.
Yeah, that one's completely nuts, and it's, you may find one or two constitutional scholars that will say that it's actually not in the Constitution. It very clearly is, but it even goes further than people think. It would actually affect people who are born to immigrants who are here legally, like if they're here on a visa or some other plan, and they're here legally, and they're born in America, then suddenly they wouldn't get birthright citizenship too. So it's totally nuts. And you're right. He for the people that want to criticize Biden for his rhetorically saying the 28th Amendment is now alive, Trump's actually doing the same thing.
Yeah. I think that the risk here is, and maybe it's been unleashed by a decision by the U.S. Supreme Court, we have certainly created this environment where the president is more like a dictator than a duly elected representative of the people. I think that's my fear, regardless if it's Trump or anyone else doing it. I'm not a fan of what Biden did either. I think that was disgraceful at the end.
Yeah, and this dictator stuff is evident in the executive order he did on TikTok, which is basically he's just going to tell his DOJ not to enforce the ban on TikTok that's supposed to go into effect. Was it today or yesterday? And so we had this whole process where Congress passes a law banning TikTok unless they sell, the parent company sells it. It goes through the whole process. Supreme Court upholds it 9-0, and then Trump just waves it away because TikTok is doing anything different. The problems it has collecting Americans' data, the security concerns people have about China are all still there. But now Trump wants to reverse that because he knows it would be good for him politically, where the kids would say Donald Trump is the one that saved TikTok. So it's still just as much a security concern as it was before, but now he's just going to, sign an executive order and wave all the actions of the past year away. It's just, it's a bit much.
What do you think will happen with TikTok 75 days from now? What should happen?
I think TikTok is calling our bluff. I don't think they're going to sell to an American company, and I think it's probably going to go dark at some point. Mike Gallagher, the former congressman, has a great point. He says TikTok could have sold to an American company, but they don't care about the money. They care about the data. They care about the algorithm. And so it's more important for them to have that than it is to sell. So that kind of shows what they're really in this for.
You are very active on social media. I'm sort of active. I've sort of pulled back a bit because it's just a cesspool in many places, especially Twitter or now called X. I guess I wondered, Chinese ownership, set that aside, just its impact on our culture and especially our young people. In a bigger sense, I mean, is there any real impetus to change these things so we're not polluting the minds of everybody who sort of plays in these arenas of social media?
Yeah, I mean, there are plenty of studies out there showing that it reduces young people's attention spans. And, I check TikTok every now and then. I get a lot of great recipes off of it. And I feel it probably diminishes my attention span as well. But, schools can do a lot by banning the use of cameras and phones in schools. There are a lot of things that can be done. But eventually there's always going to be a new thing. I mean, everybody's out there trying to make a buck, and you know, maybe TikTok goes away, but then something else is going to come up. I mean, there are already other Chinese apps out there that people are moving to. So, you know, it's whack-a-mole. You take one down and four more pop up.
Yeah, when you look at the impact of the sort of the relaxing of the rules on Twitter or now X or soon to be Facebook, I think you're going to end up with a product that it's going to scare a lot of parents, certainly, and maybe it should scare some of us adults, because I've jumped on, I still have access to Twitter, and frankly, it's horrifying, and people have said to me, have you seen what's on there? And it's about as blatantly obscene as you can get, and I don't know that that's necessarily a recipe for making our country healthier. That's my concern.
Yeah. But, you know, Donald Trump thinks it makes him more popular, so he's ready to go with it, at least for 75 more days or whatever it is.
Hey, real quick, because I know the big pardons yesterday, I think it was 1,500 or something like that. Trump pardoned most, if not all, of the January 6th convictions and those individuals. I got about 45 seconds left. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's appalling. He stands up there and he wants to imprison the people that investigated January 6th, like Liz Cheney and Benny Thompson and these people. And yet he wants to free the people that actually took part in it, which is, you know, he's the judge in his own trial here. He's actually, by letting these people free, it makes him look innocent. So, you know, it's not the way that things are supposed to work.
Christian Steiner, I hope you feel better soon. Thanks for jumping on the line. I know it was not easy to do that, but you did great.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Feel better.
Not fall asleep.
Yeah. Christian Steiner, okay. Go back to bed. He's a great, great writer. All right. We're going to take a break here. After the break, we'll go local. Jeremy Janine, Urban Milwaukee, after this. And he joins me every Tuesday. I've got a couple of segments with Jeremy Janine, founder, content creator. What other titles you have at urbanmilwaukee.com?
Janitor, accountant.
No, you do everything. It's good. All right, let's have some fun before the bottom of the hour news for your kids. That's 9:30. All right, the boat that's certainly like captured everybody's attention. It's like capsized, sort of, on the shores of Milwaukee. Where is this thing? Why are we still talking about this?
If you're looking on a map, it is just south of Musa's, just north of McKinley Marina, and just east of the Villa Terrace, which is 50 feet up the bluff. But you sometimes can see it from Lincoln Memorial Drive. It is a boat. It's been wedged there right on the rocky, sandy shoreline since early October. So we're now well over 100 days that it's been there. There's been some attempts to remove it. But the boat's become a bit of a landmark. It's got a Google Maps marker. It's got nearly 100 reviews. People are having fun. Also, since there's now ice out to it, people are really graffitiing the boat.
All right, two things. One, if someone clearly wanted to move it, they could easily move it. You have to have the right equipment, but everything is movable, including a small boat.
This boat is 33 feet long, just to give people a perspective, so it's not that
small. It's
not
a Lake Michigan boat, though, like the big ones. We're talking about a...
Yeah, that's not an ocean-going...
Cabin cruisers, something like that.
You're correct. The belief, Jerry Geyer, who runs Jerry's Dock, has been out there trying to salvage this boat. The Coast Guard kind of called him up and said, hey, come get this abandoned boat for us. And he said, okay. He's now $18,000 into it, he claims, in terms of his labor costs.
And the owner can't pay for this, right?
That's what they say.
Who has a boat like that and can't pay for it? That's crazy.
We'll get to what I think is the craziest thing in a moment.
All right.
But suspense. The propeller is wedged, Jerry believes, under 2 or 3 feet of sand. Yeah. So he thinks he's going to have special equipment come out there in the spring to dislodge it.
Oh, my goodness. All right, what's
the craziest thing is, so this couple, they're in their 60s. They're from Mississippi. Their vision was, this is basically our retirement boat. We're going to buy it in Manitowoc, used boat, 40 years old, and we'll take it down through the Great Lakes. We'll go through the in the Mississippi River via Chicago. They didn't have insurance. They didn't have insurance. This boat is out there uninsured. And it just wasn't an idea.
Why do I think this is going to be a common situation going forward? People don't have insurance, whether it's California wildfires, Florida hurricanes, or in the case of Milwaukee, a crazy boat lying on the shore of a Great Lake. All right, you're going to stick around. We're going to do a lot more after the news. Jeremy Janine, Urban Milwaukee. You know, it's funny because I'm thinking about this, and Jeremy's going to stick around after the news because we've got a lot more to talk about. It's one of those things that people fall in love with these stories. So it's sort of have this sort of funny, cool Milwaukee-ese sort of appeal to it now. But at the end of the day, it's a dumb boat that's just sitting on the shore of Lake Michigan. And I made the point earlier that somebody could come out there and drag that thing away if they wanted to. If you have the right equipment, you can move anything. Heck, in Oak Creek, we moved one of those diggers, excavators, that some kids had driven off the cliff. And originally the plan was to drag it up the cliff. That didn't work, although I learned a lot about excavators and retrieval. They brought a barge, eventually drove it onto the barge and floated it away. Everything is possible if you actually want to do it. But now it sort of has this pop culture status, and now we're going to talk about it endlessly. So it's one of those cool Milwaukee stories that we love to talk about. Hey, it's chilly out there. We know that, but don't let the cold get you down. It's going to warm up eventually, so don't freak out about the weather. I know it's cold, and I said it in my Heiser read there. It's one of those days where you appreciate the technology, especially the remote start. I love that. And here's the crazy thing. In Louisiana, apparently, there's a blizzard warning. Am I hearing this right? How is that possible? It makes zero sense. It's a crazy mixed up world, and maybe that's perfect weather relationship to what's coming in the Trump administration. See what I did there? I tied it all to politics. Because the show is... there we go. Vince Lombardi. And continuing our conversation with Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com is where he writes and does everything else under the sun. All right, so let's get to some politics. This is a huge one, and I love this story. Again, fully admit I'm a big fan of SROs. I worked closely with them when I was a mayor in Oak Creek, and I know that the relationship Oak Creek had with their SROs was school district paid half, city chipped in the other half, not chipped in, paid the other half. In Milwaukee, it's law that the Milwaukee School District has to have SROs, has been that way since last year. Jeremy Janine, what's the latest on this story?
So the latest, so SROs, school resource officers. Yeah. These are MPD officers stationed inside of schools to be proactive, develop community relationships. The latest is there's now a big fight about how to pay for it. The mayor, Cavalier Johnson, wants to go back to how it was pre-2020 when MPS ended the contract, and that was what he calls the 5-6 agreement. And if you think about the school year, it doesn't cover the entire calendar year. So the city paid the tab for the 3 months of the year the officers weren't in session, and or the schools weren't in session, the officers still were employed. And now the MPS seems unwilling to go back to that. They kind of, they didn't even give me a statement for my article I wrote about it. They've given other statements that are basically reiterated versions of the same thing. We're waiting on resources. For a while, there was the perspective that, okay, MPD maybe just doesn't have the officers. Well, now MPD's been through several recruiting classes. Police Chief Jeffrey Norman's made it very clear, hey, you ask us to jump, we'll jump. There's been no agreement on how to pay for this yet.
In your mind, as a reporter, what breaks the sort of stalemate here?
I think the legislature is going to have to come in and just drop the hammer, or at least threaten to drop the hammer.
What does that mean exactly? Because people are out there going, they already dropped the hammer. They said they had to have them.
With no penalties. So that the agreement that gave Milwaukee a sales tax, Milwaukee County another sales tax, funded local governments across state, said January 1st, 2024, MPS, return your SROs. It had all kinds of other policy things, but it had no teeth in it in terms of clawing it back.
And MPS has faced massive budget challenges. We all know the story of MPS in the last year, and it's a story that unfortunately has repeated itself over time. There's big questions about safety and security in any public place, right? Whether that's a governmental building, a courtroom, a school, a library, anywhere. But when it's something is as clear as this, does MPS, I don't want to use the term save face because I don't think they have any face to save anymore. They've been beaten down by poor leadership and poor management of public dollars. Is there any saving grace here that can say somebody steps in, maybe with legislature, governor, who's been critical of MPS as well, mayor, I don't know, somebody that's leading MPS that hasn't been appointed yet. Someone can say, look, this is the solution. Let's go.
There's one legal avenue I think the city could pursue, and that is the nuisance designation. If they really wanted to force MPS's hand, I think I'd call it the nuclear option. The city, if you're a gas station, a bar, and you continually call for police services, the city can label you a nuisance and start to bill you for those services. MPS continues to have police officers come to their buildings for incidents. They're just not there proactively, which is what the legislation requires, what they historically were. The one thing I really learned in writing this article that I didn't know, when Act 12 was passed, the sales tax bill in 2023, MPS didn't get any money directly, but MPS administrative employees are part of the city's pension system. There's about $5 million in 2025 that MPS is receiving a benefit from the city sales tax that's funding their pension system. So MPS is actually getting something out of that sales tax. And I don't think it's unreasonable for Cavalier Johnson to say, hey, you're on the clock now to pay.
Do you think, I'll throw out a couple scenarios. Is it one person at MPS, whoever's still around, or is it the entire institution at the district level that is saying, we're not doing this? What do you think that is? Or is it a number of people? What is it?
I don't have great insight into the nuances within MPS, but I think the real challenge is there is no head of MPS right now. Eduardo Galvan is the acting superintendent.
Well, there's a board. That's why I brought it up.
There's a board. They're about to turn over. We'll be talking about how there's many open seats that only drew a single candidate, but that's about to turn over again. So I really wonder who's running the ship some days on certain policy issues.
Much like the budget concerns of MPS that were handled by someone who stepped in, we may see a leadership sort of pseudo-board perhaps come in and sort of right the ship, to use a term leading back to our last topic.
Yes, lots of nautical references lately.
Could we see a pseudo-board step in and sort of right the ship here?
I think we could see the state legislature really turn the screws on MPS and make changes happen. We're still waiting. We know MPS has now submitted its financial records. We know former city comptroller Aicha Sawa is now the CFO at MPS, but we don't really know what's all in that. And if there's more bad news coming out of that, if there's more bad news that continues to come out in other areas, I would be shocked if the legislature does not step in.
Someone told me this. I'm not going to say who it was because I told them I would not out them. One of the ideas is if the legislature has to implement penalties, don't be surprised if with that implementation, it's like we said 20 something, 50, just as a sort of a punitive, you know what, you're going to listen to us. That would not shock me here. And I have no insight now as that's going to happen. That's what one person said.
Yeah, it would not shock me if more policy got thrown into any bill that had penalties. The legislature has had a history of inserting policy. They're a policy-making body. It's reasonable for them to make policy. At the local level, questions about when they should be doing it.
Real quick, because I want to kind of look ahead to next week. There's going to be a lot of concerns about the implementation of the executive action when it comes to immigration border policy. I know you're looking at some of this stuff. Let's look next week and see if we can sort of figure out where that went in the 7 days roughly since these executive actions took effect.
Yeah, I think there's going to be lots of moving pieces here we're seeing now that Trump has been inaugurated.
Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com, always a great resource for local news and more. Thanks for taking the time.
Happy to be here.
Always enjoy my conversations with my pal and teammate, Kristen Bryken, here in the afternoon, spanning the state with Brian Noonan, 1 to 3 right here on 620 WTMJ, and everywhere else because we stream, we're on YouTube, all that stuff. Kristen Bry, happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday.
Is that a question mark or is that a comment?
Well, the day is young.
So I always like to get your instant reaction to things. And we didn't have a ton of time to talk. If you don't know the behind the scenes, Kristen and I talk a lot at work.
And off work. Yeah.
But I wanted to get your take. And this is much discussed. Elon Musk's gestures. I've seen everything. And I watched it live. So, I mean, I saw it happen. And I thought what I thought, which it looked like a Nazi salute, and some people, it was some sort of Roman salute. And I made this post last night.
Which is also still a fascist hand gesture, but okay.
The Roman thing is interesting because knowing a lot about Roman history, because I'm Sicilian and I spent a lot of time watching and reading about that culture.
How often do you think about the Roman Empire?
A lot. Trust me.
Do you know that was an entire trend on...
Yes.
So you're one of the men who thinks about the Roman Empire a lot.
I admit I fall into that trap.
Unapologetically.
Because I'm fascinated by it. And it's not just the rise of the Roman Empire, it's the decline, which is also fascinating to me. But I made this comment on Threads last night. Whatever you think about Elon Musk is not the guy that anybody would salute to. He's the guy that the Roman legions would kill first. That's the guy, that weird, creepy dude who's out front. They're going to take his head off or lances. He's the guy that goes first. This guy is the biggest weirdo. I got in trouble for saying this. I'm going to say it again. He's an idiot savant.
In trouble by whom?
Trust me. I got in trouble.
Okay.
Let's not explore that anymore. But he's an idiot savant.
I don't know if he's an idiot savant. I do think he's a huge troll.
Yes.
And that was why I decided not to, that took over it felt like social media yesterday, as far as a lot of people reacting to, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. And then a lot of people say, no. But it, to me, he is such a big troll that to do it on purpose, to know that it's going to get a reaction, to know it's going to get people fired up and have them focus on that versus analyzing the executive orders or analyzing any of the other stuff that's going on. And so I think that is the biggest thing coming into this, is there's just going to be, the floodgates are open of noise, of distractions, and trying to sift through what we as people in the media, what other journalists, what advocates need to be focused on versus getting distracted by things that are bad, but also probably focus more on the things that actually have policy implications.
Do you think Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, will give him his due, is actively using Elon Musk as a sort of a paid disruptor, sort of, as you said, shift the attention away from what's really happening? I don't know if he thinks that way, to be honest.
No, I think there's utility there. I mean, listen, I was recently talking to someone who worked at SpaceX, and I asked him something along the lines of, like, is this the same person that you worked for when you worked there? And he goes, my two rules with Elon Musk is you never bet against him and you never go up against him. And so I think that there is more power there than him just being kind of the jester in the crowd to distract everyone.
Here's where it gets really serious and concerning from my perspective. He will probably be, in a couple of years, the first trillionaire we've ever had on this planet. Billionaire used to be a thing. Trillionaire, you have immense control, as we now see, because he's basically got a seat at the White House at the table. And I don't necessarily want anyone like Elon Musk having anywhere close to that kind of access. And that's what I worry about.
I mean, that was the front row yesterday, right?
Yeah. Just
the amount of money and power. And not only, and I say power as far as people who control how we communicate. And that's what my column that came out this morning was, is just, we should be concerned as far as all of the channels that we've created, not what we, but that have been created, that we utilize to amplify messages, to be entertaining, to really connect with people now, is they were all in the front row. And that's never happened before, as far as sitting in front of the cabinet members in an inauguration.
That was a little interesting, yeah. A lot of interesting. Kristen Bryan, we're going to have her stick around for one more segment. You're listening, of course, Political Power Hour Tuesday. Stay warm, everybody. We'll fire it up to the top of the hour. Local news and, of course, Jeff Sherman's Upswing coming up after that. More after this. A few minutes left on the Tuesday program. Kristen Bryan from Spanning the State. 1-3 right here on 620 WTMJ, along with Brian Noonan. You and I launched our new podcast last week. It's called
We
You
Did.
Need to Listen.
Our podcast kind of got preempted by the passing of Bob Uecker. And so we are still promoting it now. But if you text LISTEN to 855-616-1620, the Study Unlimited talk and text line, we will send you a link to our first episode that dropped last Thursday.
And I listened to it back. I love the energy and love the way you had to corral me. Because I like to go on deviant, you know, paths.
You do. I'm the one with ADHD. And yet in our conversations, like, all right, come back, Steve. We're talking about this. You're talking about something entirely different right now.
And I appreciate the corralling. So we're going to already tell people what we're going to talk about. TikTok is sort of the subject matter, social media a little bit as well. We have both have really strong opinions on it. You like to focus on the fact that I like to make fun of people doing dancing videos. That's a very small part. It's just a flashy part of my argument.
Well, it's...
There's so much more to that story.
It is more. I mean, I think that's the thing when you talk about something like TikTok, there is many different facets as far as a bigger conversation around social media and our addiction to it. There is a conversation around national security, but then there's also politicians who voted for the ban who were on TikTok. So if it's really that scary, why are you on there?
The president has flip-flopped on the issue.
There is a lot to talk about now as far as the thanking of President Trump before he was even president for turning the app back on. Like, there is a lot of layers here. And I know your big thing, the actual crux of it, is you're skeptical as far as what this is doing to society.
Yeah, that is my big concern. That's the point I'm going to make in the podcast.
And that's totally fine. I would say Well, I'm going to save it. I'm going to save it so people have to listen to the podcast.
I think they call it a tease in the radio business. I'm just fascinated by social media. I've publicly said I've kind of withdrawn from Twitter. I still look at it occasionally. I don't post. But I think these are valuable and the right tools. But I had a friend who said to me, my kids ran downstairs so they couldn't get on TikTok. TikTok was gone. And my response was, I think I shared this with you. Find something else to do. Like, if you tell me your kids are like, gonna die without TikTok. I think I'm gonna make the statement. You're a bad parent. Like, what are you doing? That's not.
How old are the kids?
Teenagers. Yeah. Which at least are teenagers, because there's some kids younger that get access.
And I'm kind of going through that right now, and that's what I write about a little bit in my column for Journal Sentinel today. Is like this between what we were talking about before, as far as Zuckerberg and shows G Chu and Elon and stuff, and it's all these channels being, you know, bending the knee, if you want to say, to Donald Trump, of trying to rethink where I put my energy as far as content and how much time I'm spending on those apps versus maybe picking up a book.
Which I have done a lot more of, and I highly recommend it. Listen, LISTEN on the WTMJ Talking Text Line, 855-616. Make that the Siding Unlimited WTMJ Talking Text Line. Never want to forget Siding Unlimited. LISTEN, and you can hear our first episode, and the next one will be live next week. Kristen Bry will listen this afternoon, spanning the state, 1 to 3. Thanks for coming in.
Always.